Welcome to China Manufacturing Decoded from Sofeast, the podcast where we take you through some of the major topics facing importers and manufacturers in China today.
Hello there again, listener. Thanks for joining us over here at China Manufacturing Decoded. We're listening to episode 25, and I'm your host, Adrian from Sofeast. Today, we continue with our mini-series on vetting Chinese suppliers. And today's topic that I'll be discussing with Renault is factory testing facilities. These are one of the things that you need to be aware of when you're vetting a supplier. So when you go into their factory, you're going to look at what testing facilities they have, because this speaks volumes when it comes to their professionalism about checking quality. And if they're not aware that they're producing the correct quality and safety of products, then how do you know that the goods you're going to receive from them are going to be acceptable? Let's get started.
Hi again, Renault. How's it going over there in Hong Kong?
Hey, not too bad. This heat is what they call a typhoon number 8 today, but a little bit of wind and a little bit of rain, nothing, not much, maybe not yet.
It's been looking a near miss.
Maybe, yes. I haven't really followed the, Hong Kong people really follow very closely, because then there's no buses, there's nothing, and for safety reasons, if I understand correctly, they're not supposed to go to work.
At this point, we're just coming back off the national holiday at the start of October, so everything's super busy now.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, the whole summer has been pretty busy, and yeah, people cannot come. I mean, it's you know what it's like, right? You can come, yeah. I mean, it's not like there's many flights or many direct flights, and you have to take a COVID test and all kinds of things like that. But then you can still come. Can you go exactly to the city where you want to go? Maybe not. Can you go straight out and see your suppliers? Definitely not. You have to spend 14 days still. So it's many people can. Could come now to China if they wanted, but it's just too much of a hassle.
It's definitely complicated.
Well, it's unfortunate, but they cannot come, and they have to count on people like us here on the ground. So we see a lot of that. Yeah. It doesn't mean the activity is really going up a lot for most companies. It just means, hey, they need local support. So we're here and getting busy. The team in China has been quite busy. Well, that's the way it is. And
yeah, it's good.
We have to plan the same way for 2021, I guess.
Sure, of course. Hopefully things will settle down and become easier. But also as well, the flights are very, very expensive, which is also something to take into account, as well as the massive inconvenience of trying to do it through all of the restrictions. So yeah, right. I hear what you're saying, for sure. Talking about getting support, actually, this does bring us on to today's topic, because we're circling back now to the mini series that we've been doing on vetting good Chinese suppliers. And this is actually part 8. And so today we're talking about checking on the factory testing facilities and what those are. And I guess that this is one of the things that auditors, for example, are going to be looking into. And these are the kind of guys that are going to be helping, foreign businesses who aren't able to go and check out factories on their own by sending staff to China or whatever. And so if factory testing and the facilities of it is something that auditors, for example, might pay some attention to, amongst other things.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I want to get into today. So first of all, as ever, a quick summary of what factory testing facilities are and what they're likely to be doing. And I know you've mentioned this in earlier podcasts, is probably a good way to kick off.
Look, you buy a product or parts or subsystems from a manufacturer. How do they even know that what they sell to you complies with the specifications that they promised to you? Well, Do they always send some samples to an external laboratory? That's, some of them do that for certain kinds of tests, for batches above a certain order, let's say, right? Just to get some confirmation, because they do not have the testing equipment on site to do this testing, and that makes a lot of sense. But very often, if the buyer is not pushing them to do this testing and to pay for it, very often they skip it. That's what we see. I mean, that's the unfortunate reality with the majority of Chinese suppliers, is that they will buy the components, the materials that they need. They will do some transformation on it. They will pack it and send it. Yeah, they will do a visual check and they will have a look, but they essentially trust their suppliers and they trust that everything will be okay. And they will have some testing facilities. Now, this is really very product dependent, so I'm trying to speak in general here, but if some of the tests are complicated, they necessitate an expensive piece of equipment, they will not buy that piece of equipment usually, and they will tend not to work with an external laboratory, right? So that's really unfortunate, and that's something that, yes, auditors of course tend to look at. What kind of testing equipment do you have in-house, and is it properly maintained? Do you take care of it? Are there instructions maybe next to it on how to operate it? And of course, how do you calibrate it or verify it, depending on if it's certain kinds of testing or measurement equipment cannot be calibrated. They can just be verified, and then, like for example, a ruler. You're not going to calibrate a ruler because you cannot recalibrate it if it starts to have a bias or something. If it's wrong, you just have to discard it, unfortunately. So what you do regularly is you verify it. But let's just say calibrate. Well, is it all calibrated to the right degree of precision? How is it calibrated? When? Does it make sense? Right? All of this is relatively important, yeah, because if they don't pay attention to their testing equipment, you think they pay attention to quality at all? That's like one of the easiest ways to flag a manufacturer that doesn't care about quality. You go into their to see their equipment. Sometimes it's all together in the lab. Maybe they use it also for their prototyping, testing the prototypes and things like that. So maybe their R&D team uses it. Maybe their incoming inspectors use it. Maybe their final inspectors use it, and so on. A lot of people might use it. It might be all together in the lab, or it might be in different, so scattered in different places. That, whatever, that doesn't matter. But you look at the equipment and you see the equipment that they've been using for 5 years. How is it maintained, and does it look like they're using it? That gives you actually a pretty good idea about the kind of people you're dealing with.
Sure. I mean, if they don't care about the testing, why are they going to care about overall quality?
For sure. Yes, it's an easy test. It's an easy test.
So suppose that your supplier is doing in-house testing, or at least they're telling you this, and they give you some sort of testing certificate. What are you then going to look for based on what the results are in the certificate?
Well, if they test, and again, if test, they would not give you a certificate. They would just give you a report of the test results, right?
Sorry, yes, that's what I
Uh,
mean.
they themselves, cannot really give you a certificate, or maybe like a certificate of conformity. Yeah, but it's a self declaration. Remember that always. A self declaration of conformity, which in itself means nothing. If you have the results, if they have logged what they found, then great. It's already much, much better than nothing, right? Now, from the point of view of the market surveillance authorities in Europe, or whatever the customs in the US, or if things go wrong, if there's a trial and there's a legal discovery process, and it goes through what actually you have done to ensure that the products you were buying and the products you put on the market were compliant and safe and so on, it's always great to have testing reports, even if it comes from the factory, and even if you have a doubt that it might not all be truthful, it's always great. This is going to really help you. Nobody can see you were negligent. Now, obviously, the best, I think we discussed this last time, the best is that you do that maybe on pre-production prototypes, and also on ideally every batch. You have someone go in the factory and pick some samples and send them to a testing lab of your choice that you select, that you pay, that sends you the results, and you see what they found on some random samples that were picked by your representative, right? Not just sort of prepared by a few engineers at your supplier just to make sure they pass the test. This is the gold standard. This is the best, right? And probably equally as good is if they send some samples to you, and maybe you have the testing or measuring equipment, and you do it yourselves, and you document it. It's nearly as good, I would say, generally speaking, for things that are not very complicated and don't require a lot of accuracy and precision. So, having the supplier themselves collect some data by testing the samples from your batch and documenting that, it is prone to the supplier playing a game, of course. That's possible, but it is definitely going to help, convince the authorities that you actually did things right, right? That you really tried to cross all the T's and dot all the I's. So it's something that I would not discourage at all. Actually, the supplier should do that. And a lot of big companies have processes in place to force the suppliers to do just that. And it works well. Now, the problem is for smaller buyers, right? And it gets much harder. Now, all of this is very, very product specific. If you think of, for example, a factory that produces garments, I don't know, pairs of jeans, most of them do a visual check and maybe a very simple measurement check, maybe just a waistband, on every single piece that they make, right? Do they record it? In most cases, no, they don't record anything, right? If we go with something very, very different, for example, I don't know, some amplifiers, music amplifiers, it's electronic equipment. Every one of them has a serial number. And when a manufacturer makes that in Shenzhen, their customers typically request, the findings of their own inspection with the details of the serial numbers, And when they do an inspection, when the customer does an inspection or appoints an inspection agency, the inspectors come and say, okay, show me your results. So all of this that you're presenting to me today, they were passed in your results. Okay, I'm going to do my testing, and then we're going to see if it's really okay. And then if it doesn't pass, if one of them doesn't pass that inspection, well, guys, you say that it passed, you did this testing and that testing, and you say it passed, but look, it's in my test, it doesn't pass. So that really drives accountability for the inspectors of the working for the manufacturer. That's a good thing. And it also drives improvement in the methods of how to inspect with what equipment. Is the inspector actually capable, of noticing problems, da 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 da, right? It keeps people honest, and it does drive at least a little bit of process improvement, at least the testing process improvement. It and that's a good thing. That's a good thing. If we look at, I don't know, maybe batteries, because we've been working
Yeah,
on
topic very close to my heart.
documenting, yes, a lot of things about batteries recently. So when you go into a battery factory, you will see a lot of batteries loaded in sort of, how you call that, big cabinets, and being tested, maybe charged, discharged, and so on a few times just to make sure it's fine. Well, 100% goes through that, so when you see that, is it going to be logged and everything? Usually no. And usually these tests are very, kind of basic, kind of simple. They do, the simple 1, 2, 3 kind of tests. They don't do the full thing, the full testing. But when I see that, I say, okay, so when is the last time one of them failed? Can I see one that failed right here? What did you do? Did you log it? Did you tell the customer? What did you do? Where are they? Did you do a failure analysis? Blah 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 blah, right? Or do you know where it came from? What is the percentage of those that don't pass, and so on and so forth? And if they don't have good responses to that, then it's like, well, then why do you do all this testing? It's just window dressing, right? I mean, it's you're not doing anything based on that, so you might as well just stop. Or maybe nothing fails ever. Are you kidding? Sometimes do you put a bad one in there just to make sure it gets flagged, right? Sometimes there's some funny discussions, because when you start to scratch a little bit below the veneer, you find out that there's they're not very serious. They're doing a lot of things for show sometimes. But that's three examples here of testing by factories. Well, I don't know. And sometimes it's relatively expensive equipment, but it really makes a lot of sense, and then they end up buying it if the buyers really push. I mean, well, one very common example is if when you go to an LED factory, and they have these huge spheres that they put an individual LED light in, and the sphere will collect a lot of information. That's not cheap, but all the relatively sophisticated LED manufacturers, they all have that from what I saw. That's sort of a given, right? And then you see the results on the computer. They have a special program on the computer, and they show you the results. That's actually extremely common in LED lighting inspections. Another example, more expensive, is the CMM machines for checking the dimensions of mechanical parts, with high precision. That's not cheap. I forget what it stands for, coordinate measurement machine or something like that. It basically goes basically in 3 dimensions, with some sort of nodes that go down and come, and until they get in contact with the product. And they can really measure it with a high degree of precision. That's great. It's a great piece of equipment. And not many testing labs actually have a CMM machine, because it takes a lot of tests to amortize it, for sure. But lot of relatively large factories have a CMM machine. I mean, and sometimes they don't use it. But it's like, if the customer comes and there's no CMM machine, they will say, these guys are not capable. When we do a pre-production run and everything, they will not be able to calculate the CPK, the capability index of the, for the critical dimensions of the parts, and we can't really rely on what they're doing, and da 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 da. So they have to buy one. But actually, in a lot of Chinese factories, even in the auto industry for automotive parts, they just fill out garbage, just for show, take data. You know, they go with a caliper and then they add one or two digits to the right, so it looks very, very accurate. You know, very precise. It looks like something out of a CMM machine, but actually they don't even use it. So these machines sort of gather dust, in a corner, which is amazing. But yeah, the testing equipment really, the first question is always, okay, what do you do with it? And, you know, do you fail some of the batches sometimes based on that? Show me. And do you have some records and things like that? All right. I'm always skeptical when they like to show some new toys.
Well, I suppose if testing the products that are being made within the factory is essential due to the nature of the product, then they're really going to need that kind of equipment, even if they sort of circumvent it, like you just spoke about with the CMM machine. But with some products, I mean, it's conceivable that they wouldn't need any sort of testing facilities, right?
Sure. If they make, I don't know. Even to get back to the you know, simple garments, I shouldn't say that. There's so many tests can be done on garments. But what they don't have usually on site is the chemical analysis, you know, the mass spectrometer equipment, because it's really expensive. So what they do is they send pieces of fabric to the lab to confirm maybe the composition, you know, to be written on the care label, you know, and usually the buyer will pay for that. It depends. But there's so many other things that they're not going to have everything in house. That's a tough one. What kind of product would really not need any kind of testing equipment? The thing is, it's not a matter of do we need or do we not need it. It's more a matter of how often do I need it, right? The simple tests that you can do with your relatively inexpensive and simple equipment might carry you, you know, most of the time, might be okay. But then once in a while, you might need to send some labs, some samples to a lab for more in-depth testing. And also when you develop new products, you might really want to do some reliability testing just to simulate the user, the way users will use it. Typically, you know, for how many years and how many times per day and in what conditions and so on and so forth. And this typically is done in an outside lab.
Okay. And I had a question earlier that came to mind when you were talking about the lab testing and testing in-house. If you as a buyer want to get a product tested in a lab on your own, this has got nothing to do with your supplier, because that's, say, the responsible thing to do, and your supplier does give you their own test report of similar tests that you're going to have the lab do, does that actually help make the process more streamlined when you go to the lab? If you can say to the lab, my supplier have given me this test report, this shows you X, Y, and Z, now I want you to go ahead and do these tests and I don't know, tell me your findings so we can confirm it.
You should not need your supplier. You should not need the information from your supplier to know what testing to do. I mean, that's, yeah. If you don't know that, maybe you should not buy directly from China. If you don't have a way to find out about that, and if you don't have the understanding of your product, a sufficient understanding to make up your mind after talking to two or three people in the industry. I mean, if you can't do that, then you're working with maybe products that are too complicated for you, that are really outside of the sphere of your understanding, and you might not want to buy these kind of products from China. That's what I would say. I know it's a bit rough, but that's really the logic here.
Well, there's a lot of risk at play if things do go wrong. So, and people might not always consider these before they start buying, I suppose, if they're not being very careful.
Well, there's a lot of people going into the bandwagon of buying cheap stuff from China. You know, oh, I'm gonna do it with my own design. How hard can it be? Talk to them 2 years later, and it's usually a different tone.
Well, another good example would have been everybody that was rushing to buy PPE from China in the early days of the pandemic. So, maybe February, March. I mean, this is, and you'll know better than myself, this is still going on even now. People are still, sending messages all the time
Yeah,
and
but
things like that.
quite differently. Yeah, quite differently. Now it's more suppliers desperate to find new customers because there's very low demand versus capacity. And I mean, that talk about a crazy market, but this market has been so out of balance that currently there's no trust on either side. I was talking to a friend earlier today about that, someone who's involved in an industry, because I really don't want to touch it. But they were saying, yes, there's no trust, meaning that the buyers cannot, the buyers don't really want to send a deposit or anything to the suppliers that they don't know, because they're so afraid of getting, getting scammed in some way. And the suppliers are the same way. They want to get some cash right now before they buy the materials and so on, and they want to be paid before they ship out, because they don't trust the customers. Because also there were a lot of customers, especially a lot of intermediaries and or people who came into that on that market but should not have come to that market. A lot of these people came into that and then canceled things at the last moment, or played with suppliers, or so both sides totally distrust each other. It's such a mess. It's such a mess. Anyway, poor,
And that's about all the more
terrible.
reason why testing in this sort of case, especially in, very changeable markets like PPE, is especially important at the moment for safety's
Oh,
sake.
totally. I mean, this is a market where you really, really cannot trust your supplier to do that, and you really have to take it into your hands 100%. And buyers are still unwilling to pay for that, I saw. So it's just, people are not ready, and there's a whole lot of buyers who should not be allowed to buy PPE, but yeah, they do because it's an open market.
Absolutely.
And
Yeah,
a lot of
dangerous.
manufacturers that should not be allowed also, but that's another story. Yeah.
Right. We've been talking about testing and in-house testing in factories, lab testing. When we think of this sort of testing facilities, what kind of equipment are we typically going to be talking about? I know you've mentioned a couple of machines earlier, but I mean, for some of the typical production processes
Sure.
for some important types of maybe electrical or mechanical products using, I don't know, die casting or plastic injection molding or something like this that's going to be very common. Can you give some examples of the sorts of testing equipment
Sure, I mean,
that one might find in a factory?
for example, if they make electronic products or electrical products in general, they're gonna have to do some iPod tests. I mean, come on, just to make sure there's good insulation, there's no leakage of the current to anywhere where the user might put their hands, for example. They're gonna have to check earth bond, earth continuity. That's pretty important. I mean, these are super super basic sort of safety tests. Could also do some continuity test, or to test the connection strength of the crimps. All of this is very basic sort of tests that can be done on electrical equipment, electrical products in general. And then you can go really deep. in an example about 3 years ago. Yeah, I wrote about that. I gave a list. For example, for die casting, so it's, you have metal pieces, right, out of casting, out of coming out of a mold. You could do atomic emission spectroscopy to really analyze the type of metals that are there. You could have optical emissions spectroscopy, sorry, again, analysis of the metals, a little bit less destructive, energy dispersive spectroscopy. That's when you have a sample that you destroy and then you analyze. So this would be different ways of analyzing actually what metals are there, any impurities, what is it, is it some kind of alloy, several things together, what is it, right? Just to double check, because these die casting factories, they receive the raw material from their suppliers. Most of the time they don't check it. And the problem is it's relatively heavy ingots, or it doesn't come in small pellets like plastic. It comes in relatively large pieces. It's not so easy to call SF Express and send that to a testing lab. It's not done very often. So it's good when the big factories will have something like that, or an X-ray, fluorescence spectroscopy. Again, but it's based on wavelength dispersion. So again, to have an idea about the composition, right? What is in there? What kind of metal is it? Or X-ray, that's non-destructive. So all of this, there's a lot of ways to confirm what kind of metal it is, and a lot of these equipment are really expensive. So you don't go to a 50 people casting factory and ask for that, but if they have 5,000 people, it's likely that they have that somewhere, right? This is just an example. I mean, well, you might need testing equipment to confirm pre-production prototypes and test them. You might need it to test the materials and components that you buy from your suppliers. You might need it to test what you are doing when you're producing. So that the testing equipment might actually be something to monitor your own equipment, for example, right? So like temperature gauges and pressure gauge, sorry, yeah, let's say temperature gauge on a casting press, or on a plastic injection molding press. You want to check the temperature maybe in different parts of the mold. Well, these gauges, they are testing measuring equipment also, but to check actually your during the process what's happening, right? And then you need them maybe to test the finished products, right? These are the main uses of the of all this testing and measuring equipment.
Well, that's a really good flavor of this for the listener. And I mean, if anybody listening isn't 100% sure about what kinds of testing might go on in a factory or the sorts of equipment, this is a good introduction. And I think it's definitely something to be aware of in a vetting sense, because going back to what you spoke about earlier, this really helps you to confirm what your supplier is doing, and is what they're telling you correct? Are the results they're
Yes.
giving you correct? I mean, fundamentally, it'll help you to find any errors and to improve the products that you're going to get, or it'll help you to red flag a supplier completely and find a better supplier, I suppose.
That's right. If they cannot even confirm themselves that they're doing a good job, well, that's a little bit scary. It's a risk.
And I'm sure you've seen this actually happen as well.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Basically, all the small factories in China,
Right.
are more or less in that case. Yes.
Okay, so definitely need to keep an eye on those guys. Great. All right. Well, thanks for catching up today. I will catch you soon.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, Adrian. Catch you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. If you've enjoyed today's podcast, don't forget to like and share, and you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other places that you get your podcasts from. See you next time.